Hey guys, right before we started to go, Tony, Sonny, we can hear you typing.
Sorry.
This is a heck of a tryout. This is a heck of a tryout for the Illuminati. Yours is not going off.
Were
just getting started, Hogan was saying that.
I don't know anything about the Illuminati, but I know they like working and multitasking. So maybe Sonny's auditioning for that right here.
No, I'm not. Don't put that on me. I don't need the Illuminati reaching out after this.
I see.
Reaching out.
Before we get going, I'm going to put in a shameless plug for my book because there you go on the camera. Swing Hard, in case you hit it, which is partly about my life in politics and partly about my decades-long struggle to escape alcoholism. It comes out on April 2nd. I hope you would order it on Amazon. That would be great. What are we going to say?
I will, and I want to sign. I want you to sign it, right?
Me too.
Oh, sure. Can
you put the cover up? The cover is important.
Yeah, there you go. Swing Hard, in case you hit it.
Okay. Look at you.
Yeah.
I know.
That picture it was taken. I think those are like khaki colored jeans, if I'm not mistaken. Those are my Revtown jeans. I think.
Yeah, they are.
I'm pretty sure. Here it is. It comes out on April 2nd. It is available now for pre-order on Amazon.com and other major retailers, but it does come out on April 2nd, and I would encourage all folks to buy it. It's a political book, but it's unlike any political book that you have ever read. I guarantee that. I think it's very interesting. That picture was taken in Tulsa, Oklahoma, outside the, is it the Box Center or the BOK Center? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but my mom has already ordered two copies, Tim.
That's really great. Two copies amazing. Pre-order.
Yep, she is.
It comes out on April 2nd. I'm going to try to generate as much publicity as one person can. And this is part of it. So I hope everybody takes a look at it, at least considers find it on Amazon. You can search for it, Swing Hard, in case you hit it, or by my name and it'll show up. And I appreciate your indulgence. I appreciate that, guys. And let's get into it and talk about news of the day, because this is the Line Drive Podcast. So Hogan, the land of the Trump campaign and the land of all the legal shenanigans that's going on, I guess the latest development is the Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, filing some papers. What is it, Westchester County, maybe New York, to analyze. The news reports say that this is the first step for seizing some of Trump's properties to come up with $454 million that she says that he owes, and the judge says that he owes, because of this ridiculous real estate case. What's your take on this?
It's a joke. Trump did nothing wrong, obviously. And it's my understanding in these cases, you have to have a victim. Who's the victim? The bank testified, not only do they like, what is that noise? Y'all hear that?
Mm-mm.
It's like a fax machine going off.
I didn't
know. They even have fax machines anymore?
Yeah.
Hogan had a flashback to 1998.
I feel like I'm having it sounds like one of those printer, the printers that, came out. Anyway.
It does sound like that, though. I hear it, too.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Okay. Big Tech's already trying to censor this.
No victim. The bank testified.
Yeah, he did nothing wrong. There is no victim. The bank went on the stand and said, no, we love doing business with him. He paid off all of his debts. That's the kind of business person you want. And we'll do business with him again. We'd like to do business with him again. Also, what's confusing to me is the way this works is the business owner makes the potential buyer makes an estimate of how much the land costs. You have to bring in the bank and other appraisers to figure out how far off they are, if they're right on the money and whatever, they kind of negotiate it down.
Collateral for the loan.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. But is the bank not culpable then? Like, do they not go to the bank and go, wait a minute, you were part and parcel in this. We're going to sue you too. Or is it just all about Donald Trump? Like, that's one thing that kind of makes me confused about it. But in addition, this is clearly an over-the-top, unconstitutional fine. And most political experts, most legal experts say this will get overturned on appeal. Like, this is insane, right? You'll make him pay a fine maybe, but if you do, it's going to be way less and easy to pay off. But what the left is banking on, what this clearly radical judge and radical prosecutor are counting on, is that they can strip away Donald Trump's assets between now and any appeal. So when it does get overturned, too bad. We already sold off all your stuff at fire sale prices, so you're screwed. It is absolutely insane what they are trying to do to Donald Trump. not just muddy up his reputation so no one in the middle will think about voting for him again, not just put him in jail, but they're also trying to bleed the guy dry financially, right? Oh, and I know we're going to get to bloodbath, so I hate to say the phrase bleed the guy dry.
Oh, no. But, jury says you can say that.
Okay. Well, maybe with the new definition that Google has. But either way, bleed the guy dry so he doesn't have any money to do anything. I am telling you, when you talk about weaponization of the highest order of an entire branch of government against a private citizen, this is Exhibit A. And I don't know what to say about it when these prosecutors run on the platform of going after Donald Trump with no alleged crime at all. And then they say, when we get in office, don't you worry, we're going to go after him. And they spend their whole time going after him. It seems, I don't want to get all, I need to go get me a tinfoil hat here. But like, it seems like it's a coordinated effort that people are like, all right, let's figure out how to do these things to him. It's insane.
It is insane. You know, and somebody pointed out to, I didn't think of this myself, but the crypto guy who was accused of robbing everybody of $10 billion, Sam Bankman-Fried, his bond was $250 million. So $204 million less than Donald Trump. And he openly stole $10 billion from people. And Trump, there is, like you're saying, there was no crime. Donald Trump went to the bank and said, I'd like to borrow money and here's my collateral. The bank did its due diligence, went and looked at it and said, yeah, okay, we'll loan you the money. And then crazily enough, Donald Trump paid the money back. So the bank was made whole, actually made a profit, which is what banks do on loans of that nature. And no one complained. And in fact, as you say, the bank testified in favor of doing business again with Donald Trump and said, you know, everything was it was hunky dory. Wow. The only person who found a crime here was the Attorney General of New York, who campaigned on prosecuting Donald Trump. And even the Associated Press, which I think in recent years, Hogan, has really gone off the deep end on the left. I mean, it has really gone crazy. So even the Associated Press, here's what they write in their story about this. An Associated Press analysis of nearly 70 years of similar cases showed that Trump's case stands apart. It's the only big business found that was threatened with a shutdown without showing of obvious victims and major losses. It's the only case where no one lost money and there weren't any victims after him anyway. It's the only time that ever happened. What are the odds? What are the odds? And God, couldn't possibly be because of Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's so funny too, who they decide. Again, I always say this. It's not just who they prosecute, it's who they protect. And I know you and I can get to a Hunter Biden thing all day to know. I don't want to get us fired up on that.
No.
Like
Hunter Biden's all laptop.
People willingly took out loans from a bank to pay for college tuition.
Oh, right.
This was the terms they agreed to, much like Donald Trump and the bank. And now the government comes in and says, you don't have to pay that back. Don't worry about that. We're going to make the people who didn't go to college pay for all you people who decide to go to college. Okay, that's immoral and I would argue illegal. So why aren't they just forgiving? I mean, are banks in the habit of just forgiving loans depending on the subset of political voters that Joe Biden wants? I mean, the whole thing is so insane. And I know the American people typically don't pay attention to this kind of stuff, especially until a ruling happens or we get closer to election day. But I'm telling you, if these folks don't wake up and take a look around at what the government is doing to people here. And look, we're talking about Trump. He's the tip of the spear. He's got the bully pulpit. He can articulate how they're coming after him. But he's also talking about other people in this country who are just practicing their right of free speech getting thrown in jail, who just are concerned about their own kid, like in your state of Virginia, Tim. Worried about their kid being raped in the bathroom, and it's the father who gets put in jail, not the rapist. Like,
right. That's the county where I live, Loudoun County, Virginia.
It's insane.
Yeah, it is insane.
I keep saying the word insane, but like I don't know what else to call it.
I know.
I feel like Will Ferrell in Zoolander, where he's like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like, am I the only one who sees this?
No, and you know, and it's funny, but because it's sort of the same type of theater in different arenas, like Loudoun County, like you just mentioned, where I live. This was the place where the Biden DOJ and the director of the Department of Justice instructed the FBI and everybody else at the Justice Department to treat parents at school board meetings as though they were domestic terrorists.
Devout Catholics as though they're domestic terrorists.
Yes, there was a whole memo just about Catholics.
Which is funny because I thought Joe Biden was severely Catholic. I thought we were told he's a devout Catholic
He's a devout pro-life or pro-choice Catholic,
who gets denied communion frequently.
Yes, for his stance on abortion. Sure.
So back to the Trump case. So you know, a lot of it, the thrust of the case is that he overvalued his holdings in order to, you know, to when describing them as collateral for this loan. That's the fraud charge. That's what they claim, even though the bank looked into it and gave him the money anyway. And then Trump paid it back, as we just covered. But the judge in his ruling, Judge Ergenon or whatever his name is, he valued Mar-a-Lago at $18 million. $18 million, which is a joke because empty pieces of land are going for tens of millions of dollars, you know, in that neighborhood, and you haven't even built anything on it. And Trump has this absolute Shangri-La, this castle, basically, there on many, many, many acres of land. And so this judge said it was worth only $18 million, right? Well, I mean, can somebody be charged? If Trump can be charged for inflating the value, can a judge be charged for deflating the value? Because listen to this. Here is CNN talking about, now Letitia James, as we said, has moved to file some papers to put her in position to start to seize some assets. And CNN now here is talking about what would happen, how much money could Donald Trump raise if he sold Mar-a-Lago, right? Listen to this.
You need at least 30 days to get any of these properties sold. But the property that you alluded to, Mar-a-Lago, potentially, that could be something that could be sold quickly. I think the valuation is something in the hundreds of millions, and I think there could be a buyer for something like that.
And that would be literally.
Okay. There is CNN, who is, you know, hand in glove with the judge in this and promoting this absurd case, openly just like casually saying, oh, yeah, it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, there would be a buyer for that. Well, I thought it was worth only $18 million. Isn't this, I swear, isn't the CNN clip in itself proof of the ridiculous nature of this entire case?
Sure. But CNN clips are always proof of ridiculous natures. Listen, I remember Eric Trump had such a great quote because, listen, I've been to Mar-a-Lago a bunch of times. Okay. Not a flex. It's just a reality because when Trump was president, we would always go there on the weekends if we weren't in D.C. and it was in season to go there. Right. So Eric Trump made a point on one of the networks when they asked him about $18 million. He said, yeah, which tennis court are they talking about? This is a sprawling piece of land. And if you know anything about Florida and West Palm, understand this. This is one of the, if not the only property that has a view and coastline that butts up against the intercoastal waterway between West Palm and Palm Beach. And the ocean. So you can literally walk out the back of Mar-a-Lago and walk 300 yards, and you're standing on the intercoastal waterway. You see the bridges, the main part of the city, across the water, et cetera. Turn around and walk back through the facility, across the sprawling grounds, by the swimming pool, up the gilded staircase, through the patio, out the main dining room, onto the croquet court. Look out over the ocean, walk underneath the street, come up to a sprawling beach club that has housing on one side, housing on the other, places for guests to stay like a hotel. And you're telling me that's $18 million? I was by a vacant lot there this week. I was in South Florida this week in Palm Beach. And it was like, you know, $25, $30 million for a vacant lot.
Right.
And you're telling me.
For nothing but a vacant lot.
Mar-a-Lago, the Meriwether Post, who tried to give it to a Democrat president who said it's too much to upkeep. So you can have it as a winter White House. And I don't remember who it was. Carter or somebody. And he's like, it's too much to upkeep. We can't do it. It's too much. Trump buys it. And of course, the irony is makes it the winter White House in essence. And you're telling me it's $18 million. Give me a break. That is such a scam. And then to watch CNN go on and go, hey, it's got to be hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. No you joke. Think?
Right. That's the point of the $18 million valuation has been a point of laughter for everybody. Like, this is how absurd it is. And here's CNN just blowing right past it, pretending that like that valuation never even existed. Oh, yeah. Well, of course it's worth hundreds of millions. Everybody knows that. I got to tell you, Donald Trump is a wealthy man, and a lot of people in this country would say, you know, this, oh, he can afford it. And, you know, and it's obviously retribution from the Democrats. A lot of Democrats are gleefully looking at this and saying, ha, 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 the boogeyman is really finally getting what he deserves. But even, I swear, even if you are a dyed-in-the-wool, hardcore, let's say you're the chairman of the DNC, right? Let's say you go, you go up that high and that's how much of a Democrat you are. Even that kind of person has to be thinking somewhere deep inside, you know, this is kind of unfair and it's kind of un-American. They made up a crime and everyone knows it's made up.
They don't care.
Even the people coming after him, they know it's made up and they don't care because of who the target is. They made up a crime. They convicted of him basically without having a trial. And now they're taking his stuff. It's completely un-American. And I swear it has to bother them at least a little bit somewhere inside, whether it's Trump or not. That's not an American thing to do. It just isn't.
Yeah, it's like, hey, and one of their big issues for this campaign, obviously, is a threat to democracy. They're going to keep saying that Donald Trump and the Republicans are. So let me get this straight. Prosecute your political opponent. We have to prosecute our political opponent, potentially throw him in jail, take away all of his property, all of his holdings, make sure and force everyone, if they just get the COVID vaccine, we're all going to be fine. We're going to have to censor and silence and shadow ban anyone on Twitter or any social media platform, X, to make sure that dissension isn't out there. And if we can do all those things, that will save democracy.
Like, I have to read this.
Flies in the face of it.
Don Jr. posted this on Instagram a few days ago, and it says, liberals, if we could just jail Trump, get rid of MAGA, end the Electoral College, stack the Supreme Court, ban voter ID, and censor free speech, we could save democracy. And I was like, that is just the perfect like explanation of exactly.
I know. It's just astounding. There's attacking democracy to save democracy is a heck of a campaign slogan, but that's exactly what they're doing.
And by the way, as we're all looking at our phones here, this is, I don't know if you can see this. This is the croquet court at Mar-a-Lago where I just was. Mm-hmm. That piece of land, just that little square, is probably worth $15 million itself.
That's amazing.
Right? So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because I have to check the condition of the grass on my own croquet court.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. And
did you play Hogan?
One of the best stories of all the Mar-a-Lago lore is that flag right there, the city says you can't have a flag a certain height above the ground. But Trump wanted this big American flag and they said, you can't do it. Liberal city can't do it. It's got to be a certain foot level above the ground. It can't go any higher. So he said, fine. He built a mound. So he could get the flag in hot, so it's higher. It follows the specs. It only goes to a certain height because he just built the ground up. So it's still as high as he wanted it to be. Just brilliant.
It's funny. It's almost a big skinny middle finger sticking up there, almost. Except it has an American flag.
American middle finger on my head.
It's very American. Well, this kind of goes sort of dovetails into the most recent Hunter Biden hearing. Our old pal Tony Bobulinski came to testify. And here is a guy, you know, this is, I swear, I love the Democrats and they're it's and the media, of course, goes along with it.
That's so inclusive of you, Tim.
all of the evidence, you know, if it's a criminal trial, actually in a court of law, an eyewitness who can come in and talk about what he or she actually saw happen or conversations that person participated in. That's considered evidence. Testimony of an eyewitness is evidence. And here's Tony Bobulinski, an eyewitness to all of the stuff that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and James Biden were up to as far as gathering money from foreign sources and using Joe Biden's power as the product that they were selling. Joe Biden actually literally sat at the table when Tony Bobulinski was present as they discussed all this stuff. And he came to testify the other day. And AOC, this is awesome. AOC was attempting to grill him, and this is just horrifying that this is a member of Congress
putting together a
business
deal.
Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO, and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir? Specifically,
you asked me to answer the question. I answered the question. No, RICO, you're obviously not familiar with corruption.
Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What?
Oh, wow. RICO is not a crime. It is a category.
Sure.
Tim.
All right, fine. Let's accept that. A category of what? Of crime.
Fruits at the grocery store. A RICO category. Fruit.
Oh.
I think if you're going to talk RICO, about RICO, you got to add in the head bob that she was doing with it. You got to add the sass in with it.
Maybe she thought he was talking about RICO Suave.
Maybe.
Or there's RICO. RICO was somehow involved with Lola at the Copacabana, right? In the Barry Manilow song.
Oh, that's true.
It was RICO.
I mean, oh,
maybe.
There you go. Yeah. That's
what you're talking about.
So also, Sonny,
what
hey, let, just let me real, ask you. Just real quick, Tim. That's like saying, AOC, you have a problem with the way you've handled your finances for a campaign. You're guilty. Of what crime? A campaign violation. That's not a crime. That's a category of a crime.
I'm sorry. It's a category.
Yeah.
That's true.
Sure. Category.
You sorry. Really have Honey. To enunciate.
Sure. I can tell that AOC's, let's
a
say,
lunatic.
Mannerism,
body language.
Histrionics. annoy you a little bit. What do you think?
Well, it's not. Yes, they're so annoying and they're really just cringy to watch. But to me, I'm like, okay, you want to present yourself as this strong woman who is just so smart, who's going to take Tony Bobulinski to task. You are going to give it to him right here. This is your moment on TV, everything. But she gets up there and starts doing this like teenage girl little attitude head snap with her, you know, practicing her syllables with each word. And it was just a complete backfire. Anyone who watches that with two brain cells says immaturity, doesn't know what she's talking about. Why is she up there? And yeah. I mean, anytime she speaks on things like this, I truly think that she thinks she is the smartest person in the room. Or maybe she just has more confidence than all of us put together.
Oh,
but
yeah, that's definitely true. She's got the confidence. That's
she's got
sure.
the confidence. All right.
It's embarrassing to watch. It really.
Well, if you see her little her fan club on X now, every time she does something like this, they're like, "Yes, Queen!" You know that
slay
whole that
Queen.
Whole,
yeah.
But it, yeah, slay Queen. So it doesn't even matter what she's saying. It doesn't matter to them, to her peanut gallery, the content of what she's barking at Tony Bobulinski about. It only matters that she's being confrontational. Mm-hmm. That's it. The fact of confronting him is all they're looking for.
That's all
they don't
care.
they don't give a rip about what she's actually saying. And in fact, if you look at what she's actually saying, she reveals herself to be a complete moron on that. And I don't think she is quite that dumb as to think that RICO is not a crime.
Well,
I think she just doesn't care and she's going to blow right past it and the correct people will applaud her no matter what.
But I think
that's all she cares about.
But if it's not a crime, great. Then someone tell Fannie Willis and let's drop all the cases, the charges against Trump.
Right. Exactly. If RICO's not a crime, then I think we've got something
else. Let's drop all the charges. Yeah, sure. Also, look, I think it does reveal a couple of things. It's not just her ignorance on many topics or her performative art that always falls flat, at least to most Americans. She also at classic attorney blunder. You never ask a question you don't already know the answer to. She asked the question, did he commit a crime? And Bobulinski just gave her three. Foreign Agents Registration Act violation, a RICO violation, and what was the third? A corruption.
Sure.
Different corruption law.
I took that to be part of under RICO.
I mean, okay. So you thought you were going to get him to go, no, I never witnessed it. He said, yeah. He gave you three of them.
Yeah.
And now you look under the phone.
Also, that shows that she is not familiar with what he has talked about publicly before, because he has many times described what he witnessed, you know,
back in 2020, Tim?
Right. Down in Nashville. The first time I ever saw Tony Bobulinski, he had a press conference right before the debate in Nashville in 2020.
Yeah.
To talk about all the different things that he witnessed. And he brought three different cell phones with him to show WhatsApp messages and text messages and emails and all kinds of stuff to prove his case. And this is the fact is the Democrats, there is ample evidence of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's corruption and involving Joe Biden and selling access to Joe Biden. There is ample evidence. And it's just that the media and the Democrats don't want to see it. And particularly the media don't want to see it. I mean, mm-hmm. I do think that there is sort of a tactical error on the part of Republicans, because I don't, as crazy as the Bidens may be, they are not stupid. And they are a very corrupt family who has been very smart about it. Of course, there is not you're not going to find a check to Joe Biden from President Xi of China. And in the memo line, it says from the CCP. You're not going to find that check made out to Joe Biden like that. They're not that dumb. But as we've talked about before here on this podcast, benefit to Biden's family. How many shell companies and how many millions of dollars did people
name Biden? 27 shell companies, at least $20 million.
Okay. So they're not dumb, and they're not going to set up a shell company for Joe Biden and put money into that. But everybody named Biden is getting rich, and that is a benefit. When you are the patriarch of a family and every member of your family is getting rich, that is a benefit to you. There's no question mm-hmm. of that. No question. Jonathan Turley has been all over that. I mean,
yeah. Because the precedent's clear. That's what the courts have said in cases like this in years past, that the benefit counts for the principal if the family members get it. Look, if you're paying for your child's education, right, at private school, or you send them to college at, you know, heaven forbid, Cornell, but let's just say Ole Miss for the good of the country, and China comes in and gives you. Right. Or gives your kids $10 million, $1 million, whatever, then you don't have to pay for their tuition. That's a direct mm-hmm. benefit to you. Right.
Yeah.
Hunter obviously is troubled. He's a crackhead. He had a lot of problems. He had no money. He's popping from job to job, raking in bags of cash here, bags of cash there, spending it all on hookers and blow and everything else. So anytime Joe Biden didn't have to deal with that monetarily, that's a benefit. Sure. I don't understand.
Also, the purpose of the RICO statute and the way that the RICO statute is used is that the head of a criminal enterprise doesn't actually have to be the one out there committing the actual acts. If he controls the apparatus that commits the acts, then that's where RICO comes in.
Yep.
So the media, who loves RICO when they can convict somebody that they don't like, pretends that RICO isn't a thing when it's Joe Biden who would be in the crosshairs here.
Yeah.
He clearly sits atop the operation. Everyone admits that he was the brand they were selling.
Yep.
You know, and he's involved in these meetings with Tony Bobulinski. He is the big guy. Are you wearing your T-shirt today,
Hogan? This is unwoke.
Unwoke. Okay. Yeah. I bought. You know, I ordered a 10%
nice.
Big guy.
Yeah, you did.
After I saw yours,
so, I need one.
I'm a trendsetter, Tim.
It's maddening. Last thing we want to get to before we wrap up here is the whole bloodbath nonsense from the rally.
Oh my gosh.
From last weekend, I guess it was, the most recent Trump rally. Before we talk about it, maybe everybody has gone over this, but I want to play the actual clip in its context, and then I want to play Joe Scarborough positively wetting his pants over this. This is unbelievable. Here's what Trump actually said.
China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. A friend of mine, all he does.
There's the context. He continues on. But clearly, he's talking about China and the cars and getting them in through Mexico and building plants in Mexico and selling them to the United States, selling them to customers in the United States. And you're not going to do that. You could argue the merits of 100% tariff if you want. That's a campaign issue. That's what he's proposing. And then he says the thing about, and if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath there. And you can he's talking about in the car industry.
Yeah.
And then he widens it to mean the entire American economy. But he says for the whole country. And then he goes immediately back to talking about the cars again. Obviously, the bloodbath he's talking about is in the car industry and the economic catastrophe that it would cause and to the wider economy outside of the car industry. That's sure. obviously what he's talking
obviously.
About. Well, so what happened was Semaphore even wrote a story like marveling at how wonderful this was and how amazing it is because Aaron Rupar, who's a guy who clips sound bites like this, clipped out the 18 second part where it's just the bloodbath part, put that up on Twitter, and everyone went bonkers. Of course, the national news media, they follow him, they see what he puts up there. They all grabbed that clip, no matter the context, took it out of context, and actually invented new context for it and said that he was calling for mass political violence if he did not win the election, which is outrageously. It's not just taking it out of context. It's inventing new context. Mm-hmm. And I mean, first, sure. Sonny, you're working at the campaign now.
Yep.
I mean, stuff like this, it's to be expected, but the complete and total national freakout of the news media over this, that was something that was created by this guy, Aaron Rupar, taking it out of context and blasting it around. And then Semaphore writing a story about this is how this all happened. The bloodbath brouhaha erupted when, and they marvel at the power that this guy has to create an entire news cycle with just one 18 second clip. Never mind that the whole thing was a lie in the first place. What has the campaign been? What that must have created a stir because it happens. And you would help it, but this one was kind of crazy.
Yes, it was crazy. But, you know, Tim, like we've been dealing with this ever since 2016 with the press taking him out of context completely to fit their own narrative. But as I go into this in my own personal capacity, not with the campaign, it's just unreal. I mean, the left has the news in their back pocket, as we know. And they've just created this whole new set of rules where, you know what, like you just said, we're going to just create this narrative out of nowhere. The news is going to run with it. All these print reporters are just going to blast it on social media, everything. And no one's going to even take the time to double check and make sure. I wonder, were any reporters that were actually there at the rally, did they stop and say, that's actually not what he said?
Yeah.
There was some more context around that. Or did they just run with it? I don't actually know.
Well, they added their own context. And that all the context they needed was that it was Donald Trump who said it. And because he has said other things in the past that they also object to, that made this objectionable in the context of their own bias. That's really, right. Honestly, that's really what a lot of them said. Like we're covering this because he has said other things that we think are incendiary in the past. Therefore, this fits into that.
This
box
must that be that too. Together. Well, you know, yeah. Sean Hannity had a really good compilation. I think I can't remember when it was. I want to say Monday night, this past Monday night on how many Democrats recently and in the news, pundits, everyone has used the term bloodbath over
sure,
the
it's
years.
A common word. That's a common
yes,
word.
It was a great compilation. And people in the mainstream media just want to turn their head and say, oh, nope, that didn't happen. Let's just have a really short memory and forget that we used to use all those words too.
It's crazy.
I can't
now,
remember.
Now you won't see him using it anytime soon. Because now
this is going to be really bad. This is going to be really bad pod. So I'm saying this up right now. I can't remember what happened, but Trump had said something when I was in the White House that the media flipped out about. And I remember I had to go out and do a press gaggle on the North Lawn after I did a TV hit. I'm coming back and they're just shouting out these things about, you know, he's a racist. And I was just going off on people like, give me a break and all this. And I get back in and the staff had pulled together all the other times that Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer had all used the same exact phrase. And I was like, thanks. That would have been helpful like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Right? Awesome research, guys.
Awesome research, guys. Thanks a lot. But
you should have gone back out there.
It was a reminder. And I remember telling the staff at the time, anytime the media accuses us of something, I guarantee you, if you go back and just do a simple search, you will find they have been guilty of the exact same thing. Now they are clutching their pearls about. Mm-hmm. Right? So frustrating. That's,
you know favorite that the picture from the Super Bowl that turned into a meme of Travis Kelce screaming mm-hmm. into Andy Reid's ear. So I tweeted that picture with the caption. It doesn't matter if everyone says it or what the context is. Trump said it, and that's what makes it bad.
That's true.
That's what Travis
Kelce. Very Kelce smart. Very smart. Tim's a great follow. I can't wait to read this book because you write so well and you're so iffy and witty. Oh. I can't wait to read the book.
Thank you. You are very witty, Tim.
Amazon.com. Swing Hard in Case You Hit It by me, Tim Mertzel. Thank you very much.
Hey, speaking of, let me ask you a quick question. Mm-hmm. This is not, I may write a book one day, Tim.
Yeah, you should. You got this a million stories.
This is the picture I want to use on the cover.
That's pretty good.
Is that not bad?
That's a real
that
good
is,
one. Yeah,
that's a good one.
I mean, when I actually decide to do this or not, I can talk to you about it, but I feel like that's kind of interesting. And then that's I'll tell you in the book what he asked me to do in that picture.
Yeah, I was going to, do you know what he, that, let me, for those listening to the audio podcast.
Yeah.
Hogan just showed a picture of him leaning over to President Trump, and Trump is leaning back and like whispering something to Hogan, like giving him instructions or asking him a question or something. Do you recall what he was saying to you?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Or do you not want to say?
I don't want to say now, but it wasn't bad. It was just funny that it was a. And by the way, we were in the Roosevelt Room, and all the microphones are hanging over a table. And for those who don't know, it's like a huge dining room table in essence. And he's on one side in a chair, flanked by different cabinet secretaries or whatever the event is. And the media are on the other side of the table with these microphones just hanging over. And he just was looking around the room doing his thing, and then he saw me, and he's like. And I come over there, and then he whispered into my ear what he told me to do. So,
and you're not gonna...
I'll reveal that if I ever write the book. And if I don't write the book, that's called,
buy a ticket to the movie. That's a deep tease, baby.
That's a deep.
Yeah, it is. I want to know now.
If I don't write the book, then I'll tell you what he asked.
Okay.
Well, the gravity of the moment was so big, and what he asked, you would be surprised. But anyway, go ahead.
He said, "Hogan, what do you want for lunch?"
Oh, that's funny.
Maybe.
That's really funny. All right. So the bloodbath thing, we all agree. That's really funny. And that would be a great picture for the cover of your book. Who took that picture?
I don't remember. One of the Reuters or Getty or somebody sent it to me as like, hey, check this out. You know, I don't remember whatever photog did.
Yeah, that would be great. That's a great front cover photo. Fantastic. But back to you should write a book. I would read it. Hogan, you have a million stories from your time in the White House and also from other campaigns, you know, Huckabee or Santorum.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Dole, right?
Didn't you work for Elizabeth Dole? And I'm working on this, but it's kind of being on the, I don't want to go into what I'm thinking about, but it's, you know, you're seeing a movement that started under a Huckabee, a blue collar conservative type movement. And then he got really far. Santorum got further. And all of a sudden Trump comes in and just kind of takes hold of that movement that had kind of begun to roil and bubble up under the surface and, you know, poke its head out in a few spots. I mean, Santorum won 11 states against Mitt Romney, for heaven's sakes, with no money.
Yeah. Right. I don't think
it was obvious.
Forget.
There was a clamoring for that type of Republican that we hadn't seen in a while. And then Trump comes along and people always try to say, you know, he's the murderer of politics, but he's not. He's the coroner. He showed up and is like, it's dead. Now let me fix it. Right.
Yeah. The bloodbath had already happened, as it were.
And I got into an argument on camera with someone recently who had said something like, you know, we used to argue over marginal tax rates. And now Donald Trump is going out there saying Nikki Haley's dress is bad. And I'm like, hold on a second. Don't pretend like politics was always just handshake friendly. I said, you know, John McCain was accused by George W. Bush of having an illegitimate black child in South Carolina, and Bush won the primary there, catapulted him to the nomination in large part because of the rumor they spreaded, because John McCain adopted someone from another nation.
How about the whole thing with Mitt Romney and the dog on the roof of the car? That whole thing. I mean, that was like a 2 week of like media storm about a dog family vacation and the way they, whatever.
Anyway,
back to the bloodbath.
Sorry.
We've gone on for quite a while. We should wrap this up.
Yeah.
But I do want to, I can't resist showing. Here's Joe Scarborough from Morning Joe on MSNBC. I can't believe a guy like this. Can you believe that this guy was once actually, he was a Republican congressman and was actually considered one of like the leading conservatives in the Congress?
No.
This is unbelievable.
Voted for impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Unbelievable. Anyway, here he is talking about the bloodbath stuff.
He's talking about a bloodbath for America. It's laid out in the terms of it. And these idiots on Twitter, these idiots on cable news, these idiots on Sunday shows, going, well, yeah, our presidents, you know, he was talking only about the auto industry. And this is one more. It's just bullshit. Let me say that at 6:15 a.m. It's just bullshit. He knew what he was doing. We're not stupid. Americans aren't stupid. He was talking about a bloodbath. Sometimes a bloodbath means a bloodbath. And when he finishes by saying, and that's just going to be the least of it, seriously, these people may be stupid. We're not.
In fact, it is Joe Scarborough who's stupid. He cannot possibly, he's either stupid or he has no trouble lying so smoothly as he was doing right there. Because no rational person who is not driven by extreme partisan impulses could hear the president's speech, President Trump that is, and think he was talking about anything other than economic calamity in the car industry and then the nation's economy at large. It's, yeah. And he's positively wetting himself there, Joe.
And they're like chief journalist guy sitting next to him, Jonathan Lemire, is sitting there going,
Oh, yeah, sure thing. Yep.
No pushback at all, just the same old. And I love it's the other cable news networks. Those are the ones that are fake. We here at MSNBC, we are the ones that really know how to report a story accurately and truthfully to the American people. So it's just whatever, man. This is why the media's popularity ranks somewhere between Congress and COVID. Because they just continue to lie and say these things repeatedly, and no one in this world, much less this country, trusts them at all.
Nope. Yeah. I mean, Sonny, when you watch that, and here's a guy, he so wants you to agree with him. And what's your reaction to that?
I saw it on Twitter, I guess right after it happened, and my first thought was, wow, this guy is big mad over something that did not happen. Like, he I would say unhinged in his hatred towards the president that he just wears his emotions very much on his sleeve. And also, I thought you weren't supposed to cuss on TV.
That's the provocative. It's like we talked about the comedians nowadays. The whole thing is just let somebody else play a clip of a politician and then just kind of lean into the camera like the Jon Stewart model, just make a face and say, it's what's effing real, and just drop a cuss word in as if that's humor. It's the same thing here. It's like no one believed him until he dropped a cuss word. Now it's serious. Like, give me.
He's serious now.
Yeah,
he's serious.
Well, now, like, if Trump were to say that, they would be horrified. But when Joe Scarborough does it, he's
and they are. He says BS from the podium all the time. They're like, look, this guy, you want this guy for your president, blah, blah, blah. And we need to be high-minded. Then they go out and say the same. It just.
John Fetterman does this. John Fetterman drops cuss words into like casual conversation all the time, and everybody's like, "Whoa, you know, look how avant-garde he is." Oh man, he's cutting it.
Sure.
You know, next thing you know, old Joe Scarborough is going to show up in basketball shorts and a hoodie.
Oh dear Lord!
Like John Fetterman.
There you go.
All right. On that note, good to see you guys.
You too.
Hogan, you should write that book. I'm going to we'll let you shamelessly plug it on here like I'm doing right now. Swing Hard In Case You Hit It by me. That's me right there.
Timmy Murtaugh.
Available on Amazon.com right now. And it actually released on April 2nd. That is a Tuesday.
And people should know, Tim has a pedigree in professional baseball, loves baseball, is a stats guy. So the title, obviously, Swing Hard In Case You Hit It, is a baseball reference. So Tim as well.
There is my grandfather was the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm going to show for the last like 1 minute. I'm going to do this. There's me with Grandpa, and there's me with my parents. My brother Steve was born after this. He's 6 years younger. but my father there. That's my dad and my mom when I'm with me at a ball game. Right.
Yes.
when I would leave the house for baseball practice, my father would say to me, "Hey, swing hard in case you hit it." And he's trying to be funny. But if you think about it, that's actually a pretty good philosophy for life, right? Mm-hmm. Anything you're engaged in, you might as well give a good effort, because if you make contact, if you succeed, you want to have put effort behind it so that your success will be as great as it possibly can be. So Swing Hard In Case You Hit It is the title. So
great philosophy. Thank you guys. I'm sure it's a great book. I can't wait.
Yes. I can't wait.
I'm proud of it. And I'm going to start to try to do some publicity now. As we near the publication date. So I thank you guys. Really good conversation today. I think it was pretty good. I hope you have a good rest of the week and weekend, and we'll see you next week. Sonny Joy Nelson, Hogan Gidley. I'm Tim Murtaugh. This has been the Line Drive Podcast.